Guys, I'm starting to fade.
Yeah, man, I'm getting sleepy. I've been up for, what, 2 weeks?
Man, we drove from Nebraska, and we've been here hanging out in John's bathroom. All we've got is, the back end of this box of Twinkies and...
this bottle of bourbon.
And tap water.
My secret supply of bathroom bourbon is almost gone.
But you know the weird thing? The sun hasn't come up.
It may never come up.
Where are we, guys?
When are we?
We're in Cromtober.
That's right. Still in Cromtober.
Surprise!
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Cromcast. I'm Josh.
I'm Luke.
And I am Jonathan.
And we have gathered in this bathroom to guard ourselves against the werewolves sent by our nemesis in Cromtober, the witch. And we've been reading scary stories, and someone brought up a question about dreams.
Yeah, so we thought, we've talked about some ghost stories of our own and some ghost stories from where we're from. We thought maybe this time around, this year, we would talk about some of the spooky dreams. Everybody has some dreams. Even if you don't tend to remember your dreams, when you do remember them, they tend to be a bit wacky. Yeah. And I don't know about you guys, but I've had some scary dreams.
For sure.
Yeah.
Where all has the witch chased us through at this point? A bookstore.
Right.
The woods.
The woods. That's where we met her.
Luke's backyard.
Yep, she was there.
Right.
And now my turlet.
And now just outside the door with an army of werewolves.
Good.
I mean, I assume that they're still out there.
Oh.
Seems like they are.
Yeah.
So we've got to just hang out in here until the sun comes up, if it ever comes back up.
Man, I'm crossing my fingers for that.
Entertain ourselves by telling about the scariest dreams and the weirdest dreams and the sexiest dreams that we've ever had.
But before we do that, John, what you drinking?
I have some Four Roses here tonight. It's my secret bathroom bourbon that I keep stocked up next to the extra TP. How about you, fellas?
Well, I looked in the back of your toilet. And found a 6-pack of Oktoberfest produced by Samuel Adams. So that's
it's what not I'm, from 2016, is it? I didn't hide it there then.
No, it's this year's.
It's this year's. Good, yeah. Good.
And I have, we rode in on my motorcycle, right?
That's
right. We talked about what we were packing within the saddlebags of that, and so Josh and I stopped at a cheap ass liquor store on the way and grabbed a bunch of those little $1 and $2 bottles of mini bottles of booze. And so I just cracked open my last little mini bottle, and I've got a bottle of Buffalo Trace here. So I made myself an old fashioned off of a mini bottle of whiskey.
Good thing you brought that simple syrup with you.
That's right.
and I'm
well, and so, I have an ice machine here in the bathroom too.
And bitters.
And we found that drive through liquor store on the way. Because we were in a hurry.
Hey, it's theater of the mind, dude. That's you right. Used that term last time we recorded, and I stick. Yeah, I like it.
I think we've got to stick with the story. That's our story. We're sticking to it.
It's almost like a surreal dream, right? Like you just think of something and poof, it's there. So,
I wonder how many people were inceptioning this image into their dreams right now. You may be dreaming while you're listening to this. You don't know.
Maybe you're falling asleep. I do that. Like I'll have a podcast going, and be falling asleep to it. And so I have to wonder how much subliminal stuff gets pumped into my ear hole. Like I fall asleep.
Shouldn't tell your enemies these kind of things.
Yeah, Luke. I know. Last night, my wife and I were were talking, and I don't know where I would like for, in the burbs. Like, that's one of my favorite movies. But Tom Hanks and the guy that plays Ray, I can't remember him, but like Ray's like chanting. He's like talking about the cultist next door. He's like, "Satan is good. Satan is your pal. I want to kill you." Want. And so I started chanting that to my wife, and she's just like, "What the hell are you doing, dude?"
Blood for the blood god.
That's right. He hungers.
Nice.
All right, so we've done the what you drinkins. Let's do the one thingers.
I think we need to thank Rob Poyton again for the one thing bumpers.
Hell yeah.
Before we die from an army of werewolves.
Yeah. Yeah. It may be the last thing we ever do, but Rob, thank you.
Thanks, bro. Who's going to start us?
I'll do it. It's my house. I'll go first.
It's my house.
Luckily, I kept in my bathroom this book by Scott Norman called Haunted Heartland. It's a Barnes & Noble book all about ghost stories from the states of Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, Ohio, and Wisconsin. So no Kentucky, but helping me to understand some of the ghost stories that exist in some of my favorite states.
Nice, man. Some good light reading while you're in here taking care of your you need a little bit of privacy.
Quick vignettes. How about you, Luke?
So I'm going to follow up. You said you didn't have Kentucky ghost stories, but I got that covered, dude. I've got Haunted Kentucky: Ghosts and Strange Phenomena of the Bluegrass State by a Sir Alan Brown. I don't think he's a sir, actually. He lives in Meridian, Mississippi, and he's a professor at the University of West Alabama in Livingston. He's the author of several books about the paranormal in the South, including Haunted Tennessee, Haunted Texas, and Haunted Georgia. So, you know, this.
So not a Kentucky colonel.
No, he's not. But I'll tell you, like, I bought this as a way to sort of round out my haunted Kentucky like library, because honestly, I don't have a whole lot. I've got a couple site specific books. Like, Josh got me a ghosts and like scary stuff of Mammoth Cave, and I've got a couple other smaller entries like that. But I needed more like broad just Kentucky stories, and so I found this for cheap, and it's pretty good. Like, it's well written, it's easy. Like, if you were wanting to sit around a campfire and say, "Hey, let's talk about spooky stories," like, people could like take turns poking around at this and find stuff. So that's the one that I brought with me in case we needed some local ammunition here.
Nice. I also have a local Kentucky collection of ghost stories. This is called Spookiest Stories Ever: Four Seasons of Kentucky Ghosts, by Roberta Simpson Brown and Lonnie E. Brown, published by the University Press of Kentucky back in 2010. And this is a very seasonal kind of collection of ghost stories, as you might surmise from the title. It's divided into Ghosts of Spring, Summer, Autumn, and Winter. And the reason I like it is it has, the local flavor. I know a lot of these places like Waverly Hills Sanitarium, Iroquois Park in Louisville, Berea College here close to the bluegrass region of Kentucky, and the Knobs more specifically. And so it's just a nice collection of ghost stories where the hauntings take place in the heat of the summer, or the cold chill of winter, or when the last leaf is desperately clinging on to this tree as it's about to fall to the ground.
Yeah, she's no joke, man. I like that her style of writing. It's more storyteller fashion than like the we've mentioned, like William Linwood Montell and his like ghost records for the state of Kentucky. But it's more like sociologists, like just strict transcripts, and her stuff is more put together in a narrative.
Yeah.
Like it's more fun to read, you know?
Yeah. Montell was a folklore professor at Western, I think. Western Kentucky University. I'm not sure what the background of these two authors actually is.
Yeah, like Simpson, is that her last name, Roberta? Like she's
Simpson Brown.
Simpson Brown. Like mm-hmm. she has a handful of books to her credit, and so like that book, I know you've showed me the ebook copy that you have, Josh. It's mm-hmm. it's awesome. Like so, it's like if I find any of her stuff, I want to snag it. Like it's one of those. See it in half price. I'm gonna try to pick it up.
Grab that,
like,
yeah.
Do you have any hard copies or anything of that?
Not of this. No. Uh-huh. I do tend to look at the local sections and yeah. in the metaphysics section.
There
so our half price books has a metaphysics and spirituality section, John, and it is
nice.
It is separate and distinct from the Christianity and religion section.
Well, sure, of course,
right? And so
chicken soup for the college student, chicken soup for the Christian soul.
That's right, chicken soup for the modern Wiccan. It's all right there. And so I did find Victorian ghost story collections last time I was there,
uh-huh.
But I was not able to find any Kentucky specifically ghost story collections. There was a handful of West Virginia ones though mm-hmm. that might be worth picking up and digging through.
Did you dudes frequent the early like numbers of the Dewey Decimal System in your middle school or high school libraries?
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Picking up these kinds of books, yeah, I always love that part.
Absolutely. In fact, I checked out. I may have told the story before. I don't know if it made it onto the show or not, but I checked out an illustrated copy of Dracula when I was way too young to read Dracula, and so I was allowed to take this book home with me. And there is in this collection a horrifying illustration of Lucy after she's transformed into a vampire, emerging from her crypt, and she's all dressed in white, and there's a little bit of blood like on the corner of her mouth, and her fangs are sharp, and there's moonlight, and I think it's Harker maybe, and or is it? It's
okay. Probably like a. Dr. Seward,
yeah.
And the Texan, I can't remember his name.
I can't think of it either.
And Van Helsing, like they're the ones that are all
hiding behind, a gravestone. And you just know that she's going to know they're there. But in the illustration, she's looking right at you. And it's like uh-huh. she's making direct, unbreakable eye contact, like trying to put a trance on you. And that image really terrified me. And I felt like, as I was falling asleep when I was about 8 or 9 years old, I felt like Lucy might be standing at the foot of my bed, waiting, looking at me with those creepy red eyes, waiting for me to fall asleep so she could drink my blood.
So what you're saying is sometimes these things that we read about influence our dreams.
Absolutely.
What kind of dreams would you have after reading something like that, though?
I would
call pantswettingly terrible dreams, or
yes, nothing good is going to come from that particular image, I think.
Well, we haven't slept for 2 weeks, so we're not too worried about dreams here on the Chromecast.
That's right. We haven't even had any coffee. I don't know how we've stayed awake.
We're pushing hard here. So, how are we going to tackle this? We've got a handful of different types of dreams we want to talk through. We want to give our own personal accounts here.
Absolutely.
So what's the way we're going to do this? We got to keep ourselves awake. So let's make this engaging.
But what are some common like archetypes of dreams that you've heard about, like or that you maybe have even had and talked about, and your friends have been like, you know, I've had a similar dream.
The wife and I have recently been having some conversations about anxiety dreams.
Yeah.
You know, when you get really stressed out, if there's a dream that reoccurs with you, like every time it seems like your heart builds up with all that tension and stress. And she's told me about hers, which involves it's the end of the semester for her of college back when we're at Purdue. And it turns out that she's been in a class the whole semester that she didn't know about.
Oh.
And it's finals time. And now she has to go and take a test. But she's never been to class, so she doesn't really know. She doesn't know anything about the class, but she gets an email that says, "Hey, you need to come and take this test, and maybe if you pass it, you'll pass the whole class." For me, my anxiety dream is a little different. When I have really stressful times in my life, I almost always dream that I eat my own teeth.
Really?
Wow, yeah. Dude, that's unsettling.
Yeah, that is unsettling.
And it's really weird. Like in my dream, I feel this sensation. Whenever I wake up, it feels like I've eaten pearls, or I think I've eaten pearl, like that crunchy feeling. And I've asked dentists and stuff if I grind my teeth, and they've never seen any evidence of it. But I have this very vivid dream that, like, I push my own molars out of their sockets with my fingers, and then I chew them up and eat them.
Wow. That's horrifying.
Yeah.
Huh. What anxiety dreams do you have, Luke?
So I'm one of those people that I cop out and I say, well, I don't tend to dream very much. Like, I don't really, I don't remember a whole lot of my dreams. My wife is the other end of the spectrum. She has these crazy vivid dreams, and pretty much on an every other night basis, like when we wake up in the morning, she can say, oh yeah, this crazy, crazy thing happened to me last night. I tend to not remember them, but as far as like anxiety dreams, whenever I was working on my thesis, so years ago, I was writing and, you know, going through the process of that. And like at the same time, I was also reading the Dark Tower series. And so I think this is around the time that like Wolves of the Caller was coming out, maybe the sixth book, Song of Susanna, was out, but definitely I was reading the fifth book, the Wolves of the Caller and Song of Susanna at that point in time. And so I had recurring dreams that involved me being like hemmed in within a box canyon in a shootout, and every dream ended with me being like gut shot and like bleeding out. And so sometimes I was like Old West style with like six shooters and like, you know, bandoliers and like loading my gun, like rolling a, you know, Gilead, like speed loading and but inevitably I would always run out of shells and then that would be it. And then sometimes I would have like semi-automatic or automatic weapons and I would be trying to fight my way out, but inevitably it ended with me, you know, hemmed in, can't go anywhere, and then, you know, I wake up as, you know, as the end of the dream, you know, plays out, that I'm like gut shot or something.
You're bleeding out.
Yeah, and it was horrifying, like cold sweats, and I didn't get a lot of those, but that one happened multiple times over like the spring semester or whatever in the summer. And so it was freaky.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a really stressful time in life to be doing all that. So yeah. That kind of makes sense.
And the right age too, right?
Sure.
So,
and plus it feels like you're in a gunfight when you're trying to defend your data.
That's true. I had the worst anxiety dreams of my life at the same time when I was, after I had defended, after I took my qualifying exam, but before I defended, and the dream that I had a couple of times was I was giving a talk to an audience like of 1,000 people. And, right. This is the first time I've ever seen these PowerPoint slides before. And they are in another language. The scales on the graphs are all weird. And I can't make heads or tails of what is on the screen, and I'm trying my best to work through it. And my advisor is in the crowd, like front row, dead center. And she is periodically telling me things about what is on the slide, but she's saying it in a language that I do not understand. And, This dream keeps getting more uncomfortable, and I'm advancing through these slides trying to find anything that looks familiar that I can tell this crowd of people. And I know that I've got to fill the time somehow, and I'm getting sweaty, and like the sweat is just soaking through my shirt, and I feel like I'm going to vomit. And just when the anxiety reaches a fever pitch is when I wake up. No one shoots me in the gut, luckily, but
Jesus,
yeah, it never ends until finally it's like, you know, I'm either going to pass out or vomit on stage in front of this group of people, and then it's over.
Those all sound pretty terrible in of themselves, but you had these multiple times?
Both yes. of you? Yeah, I had that dream more than once.
Do you have any other interesting recurring dreams?
I had a dream when I was a lot younger Luke, you mentioned the Dark Tower series a second ago. And this was when I was in maybe seventh grade, much younger. And I had never read the Dark Tower, and I hadn't really read any Stephen King yet. I'm pretty sure that I saw the covers to the books, though. But I had this dream that I woke up, and it was kind of twilight in the house, and it's foggy. And I wake up, I go into the living room. There's no one in the house with me. I go outside, and Luke, you've been to my mom's house before. We live kind of out in the woods.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a field behind the house that goes up a hill, and then there's a forest. And on the top of the hill, before the tree line, there is this giant black obelisk or tower or something shrouded in mist. And I know that if I go up there and go inside the tower, I'll never come back. It's the end. And I work up in the dream. I always work up the courage to go up the hill. And I always wake up before I go inside the tower.
Oh, man. What's in there, though?
I have no idea. I don't know.
Probably for the best.
Yeah. Probably don't want to know. But I know I had that dream at least half a dozen times. You know, the summer and fall of my, like, seventh or eighth grade year in school. So I don't know what that
means. Probably the upside down.
It could be the upside down. It could be the Dark Tower itself. Who knows? It connects all realities. How about you guys? Recurring dreams?
The teeth one is my recurring one. I've heard from my family members some interesting recurring ones. My grandpa Angel, before he died, he told me about an interesting recurring dream that he had. He was actually a track star when he was in high school. He was one of the fastest people in the state of Indiana, which is kind of hard to believe if you look at me, but, that I have that genetically inside of me. But he had this recurring dream, he said, very often, like almost twice a month, where he grew up in the Depression. He would be at the farm that he grew up on, and he would walk past the barn, and he would end up in a wooded area that didn't really exist, but he would be walking, and then he would decide to try and run through the woods, and it would get muddier and muddier, and the ground would try and eat his feet, and then these people would rise up out of the mud, and they would start following him, and he would keep trying to run away from them, and they would keep getting more and more numerous, and then they would just capture him and coalesce over the top of him in this like mud pile and suffocate him until he woke up.
Jesus.
Yeah, that's scary.
Yeah. But it always freaked him out because he was fast, and you can't be fast in mud.
Right.
So he couldn't get away from him.
It takes his advantage away.
Yeah.
So
Luchasaurus, any recurring dreams?
No, outside of the, you know, the gunfight within the Box Canyon, like that's really the only thing that's come back that I can think of.
I find reoccurring dreams very interesting because when we think about dreams and we read about them, we're always sort of told about how chaotic they are or how random the information can be that leads to a dream. So it strikes me as odd that there can be reoccurring themes amongst your dreams. I don't know a lot of the science behind dreams. Do you guys?
I don't know. No. But I do have an interesting portion of a letter that Robert E. Howard wrote to H.P. Lovecraft around about January 1931. And it says, "I believe that many dreams are the result of ancestral memories handed down through the ages. I've lived in the Southwest all my life, yet most of my dreams are laid in cold, giant lands of icy wastes and gloomy skies, and of wild, windswept fens and wildernesses over which sweep great sea winds, and which are inhabited by shock-headed savages with light, fierce eyes. With the exception of that one dream I described to you, I am never in these dreams of ancient times a civilized man. Always I am the barbarian, the skin-clad, tousle-haired, light-eyed, wild man, armed with a rude axe or sword, fighting the elements and wild beasts, or grappling with the armored hosts, marching with the tread of civilized discipline, from fallow, fruitful lands and walled cities. This is reflected in my writings, too, For when I begin a tale of old times, I always find myself instinctively arrayed on the side of the barbarian against the powers of organized civilization. So even in his dreams, he's having these narratives play out where he is identifying with the what we would consider a less civilized person.
Right.
But
what do you think about what he says, though, that there's something to dreams?
That they are these weird genetic memories?
Well, I guess even more generally than that, because there's a lot of people who buy into dream interpretation and that dreams mean something more than just chaotic electrical impulses across your neurons, which Howard seemed to believe. What do you think about that?
I think you can find meaning in almost anything if you look hard enough for it. Right? Like, I think,
yeah.
But I also think that you are intimately connected to your dreams. And right. Because of that, you have the context of your life. You know all of the events that have taken place, the entire history of you. So if you have a dream where you are in a race and you're trying to beat the clock and you know that if you don't beat the clock, then something will happen. You can apply your context, your knowledge of your life and what's going on to that situation and derive meaning from it. So in a way, I do think that dreams have meanings, but I don't necessarily think that dreams are prophetic, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
How about you guys?
I guess I keep wondering, because you had sent us that earlier today about Howard. He was kind of active in a time when Freudian and Jungian theory about dreams was very prevalent. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, yeah, sure. During the early part of the 20th century.
So they read a lot into dreams. Freud really thought that dreams meant a lot, that they were part of your repressed desires and that they represented this sort of pathology in your head about they represented what you really secretly wanted the world to be like. So I wonder how much that influenced Howard's thinking about dreams.
Well,
our modern sensibilities about them too.
Well, I mean, certainly like psychology and psychiatry, there was grasping at trying to like put some structure into dreams and that part of how our brains worked, right? And so like with our recordings previously, we've talked about Edgar Cayce, we've talked about like he was the dreaming prophet, right? And he's a Kentucky guy. And so we've talked about his relationship to like lost continents and lost worlds. But, you know, I think there's something to the idea, and Howard tapped into it too, that like with his writing, the whole like ancestral knowledge, that if you can tap into like some sort of like latent spiritual like lineage that you're part of, that's accessible through your subconscious. And so and I think that's kind of the way that a lot of the people that would try to derive meaning out of dreams too, like they, you know, you're tapping into something that you're normally tuned out to, but you're tuning in, right? Like to use like counterculture-y type
reference. Right, your brain is open at night.
Yeah.
Because you're asleep and you can access all that kind of cool stuff.
And so maybe you're collating things that ordinarily you wouldn't be able to put together?
Yeah, like you got the scanner, like you're tuning across all the frequencies, right? You're just capturing all kinds of crazy stuff. Whereas when you're awake and lucid, you're honed in on like the real here and now, right?
Well, and Freud was very into the idea that in reality you can't always express what you want, what your deepest, darkest desire is. But in your dream, you can. I think one example I read earlier today is you might dream that you burn your workplace to the ground, but that it doesn't mean you really want to be a pyromaniac and burn your whole office down. It represents this desire for exerting control over your workspace.
Right.
So that there's always some sort of interpretation around these weird things. We dream about eating teeth and getting gut shot and black obelisks. but that if you just sit down and think about it or ask somebody about it, they may be able to help you to get beyond that sort of definitive look at it into the more abstract idea of what it represents. Like maybe black obelisks represent something more than just scary unknown to you, Josh.
Right.
Could, yeah. It could be some anxiety or some thoughts or feelings I was having at the time.
Yeah.
That were just right. manifest there.
Yeah, and like being stressed out and writing a thesis, or being stressed out and like taking college classes and being afraid of, like, you know, failing a course. Like those things, we can easily envision the dreams that myself and your wife both had, John, like how they would like play out. I don't know. I wonder, like, so maybe this is a good segue, because I can come up with like a horrific dream example and sort of tie it to my personal life. But if you guys had like some genuinely like not just unsettling but like terrifying dreams.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like, I was thinking about this earlier because I knew we were going to be talking about dreams. So on my way home from work, I was kind of thinking about the timeline here, and it's a little bit fuzzy to me, but like probably the scariest dream that I ever had must have happened. When I was in high school, I was really, really involved with the Future Farmers of America. I was really into the FFA and the 4-H and stuff. And so I remember I was out like on an overnight trip for like a judging contest, like an agricultural kind of thing. And I had this dream at a hotel in the middle of the night. And that dream basically was I was home in my room, which the room that I grew up in, like as a teenager, was like down a set of stairs. It was basically like a garage that had been renovated and turned into like a legit portion of the house as far as like an interior. And so I have this dream of like hiding from my father, and my father like coming around and like seeking me out and like dragging me out of the closet and like lighting a cigarette and like burning my eyes out. Wow. And he's like, whoa. He's like either a zombie or like feral. And like just like at some point, like concurrent with this dream, my parents, you know, went through a divorce. That kind of thing happened at around the time that I was probably like 15, like before I started to drive. So as I was driving home today from work, trying to think about the timeline of when this dream would have happened versus like what was going on in my personal life, like there's some correspondence there, but it's not concrete. And so I wonder, like, can those types of emotions, like how does that stuff like play in and like just right. manifest as a dream? But like that dream specifically, and that's like a, you know, these are common tropes and common themes, like these things pop up, right? Like everybody has mothers and fathers and siblings and relatives that can play active roles within dreams, and there's these powerful symbols that we know, but like the symbol of like a father figure and like the symbol of like a monster that's doing something horrible to you, like those two things got mixed up. And at least in my dream, it was like a zombie burning my eyes out with a cigarette. Like it was just like, it was crazy. And I mean, on top of that, you know, I was like a 15-year-old smoking cigarettes back behind the barn. Like, of course, I'm sure like there was a little bit of like that kind of guilt getting wrapped up into it too.
I always felt that my scariest dream didn't have anything to do with my real life. Like, I like dreams like what you're describing. As scary as it is, you can boil it down to something in your life. Mine was sort of a sleep paralysis dream that felt very random, where I was at my house that I grew up in the country of Tipton, Indiana, and across the street from where I live or where I grew up was this little woodlot. And in my dream, I was a kid and I was going outside. When I was a kid, I was terrified of aliens. I've talked about this on the show, I think, a dozen times at this point. And I had very strict rules about going outside that would keep me safe. And one of them was that you can't shine a flashlight in the sky, or it tells things where you are.
These were like Jonathan's rules?
Yes, Jonathan's rules to keep safe outside from the supernatural. If you shine a flashlight in the sky, it tells the things that you don't want to know about where you are. So in my dream, I go outside and I break my rule. I don't know why, but I do. And I start walking towards this tree that we had planted to memorialize my sister. And I get next to the tree and I get stuck. I can't move anymore. I'm completely paralyzed. And out of the woods across the street from us come these eyes. Like, I can see these bright red eyes deep in the woods across the street from us. And they're just staring into my heart, into my soul. And they're paralyzing me. It's like Bela Lugosi's Dracula. You can't move because you're hypnotized. And I'm rooted to the ground next to this tree. And they just keep getting closer and closer and closer to me. And they keep getting bigger and bigger until they're in front of me in this, like, slavering beast with ruby red jewel eyes is standing in our yard ready to eat me. And I'm also trying to scream the whole time for help. But when you are sleep paralyzed, you can't do that. So you just kind of let out this hoarse croak of... Yeah. And I kept doing that, trying to yell for help. And as this thing gets on top of me, it's getting ready to eat me. I wake up and I slowly start to move everything around. And that was my first experience with that sort of sensation of, I don't know if it's true sleep paralysis. I know that that's sort of a specific scientific thing, but that's what it felt like.
Mm-hmm.
And in my life since then, I've had instances where I have dreams of something in my room trying to get me doing that. And my wife has told me that I've woken her up because I'll be sleeping next to her going like hoarsely trying to scream out some sort of plea for assistance. And she wakes me up and I get away from whatever monster is attacking me then. But Mike, who's been on the show, he has some sleep paralysis as well with demons that have been in his rooms. And it happened when we lived together. He had maybe we can have him call in sometime and talk about that.
Yeah, you've told us about that. That's Bourbon and Barbarians, Mike.
Yes, Bourbon and Barbarians, Mike. Alois, as it were. Josh?
I've had a couple of really terrifying nightmares, and the themes are pretty similar. So I'll go with the more recent one, which actually I had earlier this year. And much like you, John, I woke Ashley up in the middle of the night because I was screaming in my sleep. I don't think I was paralyzed. I wasn't trying to move, but I was screaming evidently. And so I mentioned that my mother's house is at the end of this road, kind of in a rural area over in eastern Kentucky, where in the wintertime, the sun goes down at about 5:45 and twilight sets in, darkness, full dark at 6:30.
God bless you, daylight savings time.
So our road that goes from the main highway up to my mom's house, about a mile or so through the woods, is pitch black dark. And so in this dream, I'm riding a bike and I'm riding up from the main road toward mom's house. And I'm coasting down this hill and I'm about to go up another hill that's on our road when I hear the sound of other bike tires on the blacktop. And it sounds like they're coming sort of toward me. And just as I start to go up the hill, this old man on a bicycle passes me. And I hear something just as he gets past. It sounds like he's wrecked his bike. And neither of us has a light, by the way. So it's dark. Like, we're trying to just ride in the dark of an eastern Kentucky forested rural road. So I hear something behind me and I, you know, hit the brakes on the bike and do kind of a turn. And when I turn, I realize that what has happened is the old man has not wrecked his bicycle. He jumped off of it and is now about 4 feet away from me, walking toward me with his hand outstretched. And it's this crinkled, wrinkled, gnarled hand, almost like a claw, and he's reaching toward my face. And I know that if he touches me, I'll die. I know that I'll die. And he's getting closer, and there's nothing I can do, and I can't get my bike turned around, and I'm on this hill, and I want to go up away from the old man, and I can't. And he's getting closer and closer and closer, and just before his gnarled death touch brushes my cheek, I scream and wake myself up, and Ashley like shakes me and is like, "You're screaming, you're having a nightmare." And I have goosebumps again just talking about it. It is I don't know, it's one of those dreams where you're convinced that everything that is happening is real.
Yeah.
And there's no context, there's no, you know, you don't have memories of how you got to this moment really, but it feels so real.
Right.
And that dream was one of them. And I've had several dreams before where these apparitions are reaching out to touch me, and I know if they touch me, it's game over. So I don't know. I can't describe how scary those dreams are as they're happening, and immediately after, it's just this feeling of pure horror, just terror.
You kind of sit up for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, in a sweat.
Yeah.
Catch my breath.
Yeah.
Convince my wife that I'm not dying or having a seizure.
Go crawl into your mom and dad's bed.
Well,
so Luke's was kind of from not childhood, but teenagerhood. Do you have any kid era dreams that stuck with you for a long time?
Do you mean like earlier than that?
Yeah, I guess I bring it up because I had one when I was real little.
Uh-huh.
It's like the first nightmare I remember. And I was being attacked by the Sesame Street characters.
Oh, shit.
And the end of the dream was Oscar the Grouch pulling me into his garbage can to kill me.
Oh, man. That's horrific. As a child?
Yeah, that is scary.
Yeah, I was like 6 years old. My brother was around, so I must have been 5 or 6. And I remember distinctly waking up and being like, that was some nonsense. And I went and got in my mom and dad's bed, and I slept perpendicular to them so they wouldn't know I was there. Because I was very terrified.
Dude, I had a dream when I was maybe, man, it was before I turned 7 years old. So I'm like 5 maybe or 6. But I had this dream that a cartoon cat, like a giant cartoon cat, turned me like Jerry from Tom and Jerry. Turned me into a sausage or a hot dog or something and threw me down onto a grill.
Oh, no.
And was cooking me.
Dude, that's like out of like a cartoon, like Warner Brothers depiction of hell or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's all I can remember from that dream. But it stuck with me since then. I haven't thought about that one in a while.
There are feelings that you associate with it, though, right? Like, I don't remember all of the dream where the Sesame Street characters tried to murder me, but I do remember like my first feeling of terror, and I can only assume that being a sausage is terrifying.
Yeah, I was getting cooked.
Yeah,
it was scary. So yeah, those are probably the scariest dreams that I can think of, at least right now.
Nothing is scarier than your own mind, right?
Oh, right. Like,
when I think of horror, I think of my own brain. I think of those dreams and stuff because I know how to make myself scared poopless.
Right? Yeah. No one knows you like your subconscious, and right. It knows everything about you, including the things that you don't want to acknowledge.
I'm surprised I don't have dreams about clowns from outer space that are disappointed in me or something like that.
Disappointed. They're just shaking their heads.
Yeah, with like student loan like, bills like or something.
Arms crossed, John.
They want to spray you with the seltzer bottle, but they don't.
Yeah, just not worth it. Any other dream genres that you can think of? Do we want to end on a pleasant note, perhaps?
Have you ever had the dream that you're flying?
I've never had a flying dream, no.
Have you ever had one?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
In the dream, do you realize that you're dreaming?
Yeah, I've had that happen.
lucid dreaming?
I don't know if it's necessarily lucid, but I've had the dream where I'm suddenly just flying and I realize that I'm dreaming and I don't want to wake up, and then I wake up.
Right.
Or I've had the dream where I'm flying and then suddenly I'm not flying, and it's as though I've forgotten how, which is very frustrating.
Yeah, that's
so funny. I mean, it is that.
That's a bummer.
It's like a frustration dream or something. Like, yeah, like I've landed, but I don't know how to take off again.
I talked about a very calming dream I had last year when I had a classmate that died. I had a very similar dream once about my grandma a while after she had died, where my grandma Angel, who was wife to the grandpa I talked about earlier, she had a stroke. So for like the last year and a half of her life, she couldn't speak. Everything came out really garbled, and it would be nonsense. You couldn't really converse with her. Mm-hmm. And I always thought about, it was like a week before her stroke, my wife and I had randomly stopped to see them. And I really treasured those moments because I couldn't talk to her anymore. And she called me John John all the time. Mm-hmm. So she at that time when she was still fine, she was very happy to see us and said she loved me and to be good, John John. And so I always remember that after she had her stroke, and I had this dream a few months after she had died where she was wearing these clothes that she had wore at our wedding. So it was this like purple pantsuit, kind of lavender. And we were at the Boys and Girls Club in town where I grew up, where you could have events. And we were sitting at this table and there was cake and everybody was really happy, but I didn't know where I was. I didn't know why I was there. And she was just eating cake and there was like joy and merriment all around us. And she said, it's going to make me cry. She said, I'm okay, John John. Everything's okay. And then I woke up.
Oh, dude. That's a comforting dream, though.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, because I couldn't talk to her for like a year. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's comforting. That's good. Yeah. That's a good dream.
That's why I'm always interested in dreams, because did I make myself dream that, or what happened?
Right, yeah. I don't know. Did your subconscious attenuate to a frequency that allowed you some glimpse, some moment with your grandma? Like, right. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, we get older and older, and death creeps closer, right? Like, that's a thing that we will all inevitably face, and it's scary, right? Yeah. But more and more, like, this year, it's something that you, like, at least me, like, I've thought about it just because I've known friends of mine and people that have passed away. And so I've thought about it, and it's like, I like the idea. I like the potential for like all things existing at all, like all moments of time, sort of like being their own representation. Like, you know, there's lots of dimensions. There's lots of ways that things could be playing out across the universe, right? There's a lot of, mathematical explanations for saying that at any given point in time, like that exists in perpetuity, right? So mm-hmm. I love the idea of me thinking back when I was enjoying myself at 14 or 15, like as a carefree, like teenager with friends that, you know, that I hold dear. And I like the idea of me being able to think about, you know, like loved ones that are, you know, there are these moments that we had together. And so
right.
it's, I think memories and dreams, it's hard to sort of tease them apart as far as like what they mean and like what they really represent. But it's hard to distinguish like the real from the unreal, right? Like what right. is truly the objective moment? Like we of course we live moment to moment and we see it, but we all have memories and we all have dreams, and those things are hard to put into words. But man, like I just like the idea of that memory, that dream that you have, John, being an actual sort of path or like a moment in time. Like that was something that you experienced, whether you were asleep, but it was a moment that you shared, you know, perhaps with someone that really meant something to you.
With time almost like your dreams, your memories and reality all intersect at a certain point and make you feel better.
And the blessing of it is that you got to experience that and remember it, right? Like that's a dream that you have.
I didn't forget.
And you didn't forget it. And it means something to you. The curse of it is that when you go to sleep, you can't access it.
Yeah, you can't conjure willingly. That back, right? Yeah.
So it's this weird kind of place that you go to almost, but you're just in your head.
Yeah. It really is magic. Like it's a different kind of, it's a different kind of world, right? Like rules just don't play out. And as they do here.
Yeah. This was a good discussion.
Yeah.
Dreams are cool.
Dreams are cool. Dreams can be terrifying. Dreams can be hopeful.
The witch uses them for evil.
But the witch uses them for evil. And that's why we're here in this bathroom.
No, I feel like with those hopeful notes, I can almost see a little bit of sunlight peeking through John's like marbled glass window there above the stall of the shower.
Yeah.
Stained glass windows in my bathroom.
It's no, like, you know how they're kind of marbled so that the people can't see all naked, but
yeah,
you get able for the light to come in.
You got
to
watch out for those peeping toms. You're a nudist or a Buddhist?
Nudist.
You're a nudist Buddhist.
Well, yeah, it looks like the long night is starting to diminish.
Woohoo!
And maybe we can get back on our way to Kentucky.
Dude, we got to go
out for pancakes. All of our silver weapons are sharpened.
Yeah. We're going to go out for pancakes first. Silver weapons. I hope you mean butter knife.
Yeah, that's right. And forks. To cut up that pancake we're going to eat.
This is a happy morning. I
have really bad news, guys. They don't have Waffle House in Nebraska.
What?
It's not the South.
So. Oh, no! Where are we?
Where have we come?
A world without Waffle House?
That's a world I don't want to live in. I want to wake up from this waking nightmare.
Where did that witch send us?
We're in Nebraska, Luke.
All I can see is corn.
We were in a bathroom, but it's all corn.
Miles and miles
of corn.
Hey, Chromcast. This is friend of the show, Mike Scavarla. John tells me that you guys are looking for scary dream stories for Chromtober. And I have one or two that I'd like to share that you might be interested in. So the first is from when me and John were living together at Purdue as roommates during our undergrads. And it was right before one of the breaks, Christmas break maybe, and I was laying in bed in the middle of the night, and all of a sudden I woke up and I couldn't move. And there was this shadowy presence up in the corner, like darkness personified with bright red eyes. And it was quite possibly the most terrifying thing in I've ever experienced. Just laying in bed, having this thing, demon creature stare at me while I couldn't move. And, it took a couple minutes to pass. And when it finally did, like I knew that it wasn't real, and later found out that it was probably something called sleep paralysis. But at the time I was so shaken, I got out of bed and just sat on the couch with a light on for about an hour, just terrified to go back to sleep, even though I knew it was, nothing there and silly. Fast forward a couple of years after I got married and laying in bed with my wife, and the same thing happens again. Like I was laying on my stomach and like woke up middle of the night, could not move for the life of me. And like behind the bed and like the crack between the bed and the wall down on the floor, there was like another shadowy demon figure thing that I knew was just coming to get me, even though I couldn't see it, like behind my wife's head. And, you know, even though at that point I knew what sleep paralysis was, you know, could not stop the upwelling of terror from the pit of my stomach. And again, it took a couple minutes before I could like move and, got up, got out of bed, walked around for a little bit and, kind of shook it off, but maybe not quite dream stories, but, close enough. I hope you appreciate it.
That night her kiss told me it was over. I walked out late into the dark. The misty bloom seemed to soak up my sorrow. The further I went up, I felt a spreading.